This interview with Barry Henderson was recorded on June 29th, 2021, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
I was involved in a conspiracy, a drug conspiracy. No, I was actually a product of my environment. It was around me. The guys that actually, because my father wasn't in my life as much as he should have been, the guys that I looked up to was like my older brother, father figure, and a few other guys that, you know, actually they were actually involved in that circle. So, you know, at a young age, by me not having the relationship that I wanted to have with my dad, right, I took the position of being a man at an early age, meaning that I wanted to be a protector and a provider for my mom and my sisters. I have 8 sisters and I have 2 brothers. Well, actually, I spent the total of, let's say, to not be exact, maybe 17 and a half years, somewhere around close to 18 years. My incarceration was throughout the, I was with the federal system. So I was being transferred from various different states during time in different places all around the world. Just giving you a brief estimate, probably maybe 6 to 8 institutions. Well, for me, right, it's something at the very beginning, right, that it's mind-boggling because it's a change, an unfortunate change, right, that you have to deal with, and you have to, at first, you know, change is difficult because, you know, change is a process. So it was difficult at first, but in being there, knowing that it wasn't nothing that I could do about it, I had to accept the fact of the circumstances and man up and accept responsibility and do what I had to do. I was 29 years old when I got sentenced. And for me, it was more than getting the time. I was feeling more, right, uneasy about the disappointment that my mother, that I had seen in her eyes. And I was just put in a position where I just wanted to apologize to my family and friends for any discomfort that I may have caused them throughout my decision-making in my younger life. It's a pain that it's like a pain that stays with you, that it never actually goes away. It just gets better with time. No, well, one of my older siblings prior to me being incarcerated, my older brother was, and some other family members as well. My older brother, and on my case, I had my younger brother, and a few of my nephews as well. Well, I can say that for my younger brother, and I could, so to speak, also say that my influence had somewhat came from my older brother as well. That day was a day of sadness and misery for me because, you know, like I said, you know, change is difficult, and it was a surprise to me. I didn't know it was coming. And, you know, like some changes are good and some changes aren't. But you have to just, when you put yourself in certain situations, you have to man up and make the adjustments, you know, and try to make the best out of a bad situation, which I did. A lot of the adjustments that was made in my life were bittersweet. They were good because, you know, when I was in the street, I had so many people that I thought were my friends, right? But you never really actually find out who's a real friend until you get put in a bad situation. So all of the people that I thought were in my corner was actually in my corner only because they had some sort of hidden agenda. The relationship wasn't as pure pure as I thought it would, was or should have been. Well, it was a shock to them as well. It was a shock to my mother because, you know, in my mother's eyes, she could never really see no wrong. And, you know, when you get put in a bad situation and you're being judged, right, by the court system, they can, so to speak, paint a picture of you based on the information that they have gathered, right? And based on that information that they have put together and gathered, that is not the real you. It's the picture that they have painted that they want to be you, that they see you as, but it's not the real you, because the people that know you and the people that love you and make the sacrifice to stand by you, they know that that was just something that, it's just something that they wanted to have me perceived by. And, you know, it's always going to be some, a little bit of truth mixed with a bunch of falsehood. Oh, absolutely. It was big, big, big exaggeration. You know what I'm saying? On the government's part. And then you have to also remember that, you know, being put in a bad situation, the worst thing, one of the worst things for me, right, was being put in a situation where, as though when I got locked up and they had sent the, so to speak, court appointed lawyer to see me, right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The worst thing that you can do is put your trust the way the system is in a court appointed lawyer, because at that time when I went to prison, right, it just appeared as though all of the court appointed lawyers, right, all they wanted to do was get as much information from you as they could get. And then in return, they would tell you to make some kind of condition to accept some kind of sentence. And they didn't try to even consider putting up a fight for you. So when a lot of brothers, that's the reason why they don't have any faith in court-appointed lawyers, because a court-appointed lawyer, right, their most, I believe at that time when I got locked up, that their ultimate goal is to put you in the system, not to help you. No, I'm not saying that you don't become rehabilitated. I'm just saying that it was so little faith, right, in the justice system based on putting your faith in a court-appointed lawyer. So I was fortunate enough to get me a private attorney at the time. But a lot of people may not have been in a position to be that fortunate. So they had to actually deal with a situation where they really didn't have no faith in the people that were representing them. And that's not a good feeling. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of guys that were, right, put in those kind of circumstances that I have talked to, and, you know, that until here recently, it just, you know, lately, you know, with this First Step Act coming into place, and just here recently, you have a lot of court-appointed attorneys that, you know, they're doing great things now. They're doing things that the attorneys that you pay won't do for you. They've gotten a lot of people that I know that I'm familiar with, right? They have been successful in getting these guys home when these guys have repeatedly paid private attorneys to help them, right, somehow get their freedom back, and it never happened. But, you know, there are some good court-appointed lawyers. So now my faith has been, right, restored in court-appointed lawyers to a certain extent now. Well, what I need y'all to know is that my faith has somewhat been restored, because since I have been home, I had some friends of mine that were put in bad situations, like they had life sentences. And the life sentences that they had, right, certain things were submitted to the court system by court-appointed lawyers. And the things that were submitted to the court on their behalf, those things were able to get them free again. And they had life sentences. They had no intentions on thinking that they would ever be free again. Well, for me, it was a cut and dry case. The only people that were, like it's an old saying, is nobody that's ever going to be there for you while you're incarcerated, but mothers and true lovers. And those were the only people that actually really showed me some support, right, in me being away. And I've learned that it was very few. No, I never became fearful for my life because I was removed from society and put into, right, an atmosphere where I didn't know anything about, because I was always the kind of man that basically stayed to himself. See, in situations like that, you can only make things complicated for you based on the kind of profile and character that you have. You understand what I'm saying? Well, I was the kind of guy that didn't socialize a lot, and I spent a lot of time to myself, with myself. And, right, I was a very good, when it come to choosing my associates and friends, I was very careful in doing so, you know, based on the things that had happened to me prior to me being incarcerated. So I didn't have anything, right, to give anybody for free. Everything that I had given everybody, right, from that point on, it had to be earned, as far as a friendship, association. Well, I mean, I've seen a many horrific things, you know what I'm saying, as far as things happening in certain situations that, you know what I'm saying, that I really don't feel comfortable with speaking about, because, like you say, those are horrific things, and certain things that you see, you have to take to your grave, which you can't. Certain things you just don't repeat. Well, they were always more bad cops than good cops. Because, you know, in being in a position like that, I would guess the cops would get promotions based on how bad they were, not based on how good they were. So you would only get promoted, right, if you, right, was the kind of cop that had a lot of write-ups and nobody liked you and you didn't treat people in a respectful manner and you tried to, you know, abuse people and treat them less than, you know, human beings just because they was in a bad situation. So those kind of cops, when I was away, is the kind of cops that always have become more productive, but then you'll run across a decent cop every now and then. And, you know, men recognize men wherever you go in the world. So every now and then you run across a decent cop, and they'll tell you about certain cops that, you know, you can't pay him no mind. He's an idiot and blah, blah, blah. He's a racist, or he's this, or he's that. And they'll make you aware of it. So you can try to do your best to avoid being around any kind of bitterness. I would never say that it was worth, right, losing my freedom for all of that time. But I would also say to you that I have the nicest guys that, you know, I have ever met under those bad circumstances. And as just as far as guys just being men and respectful men. So it's, you know, you got to take the bitter with the sweet. I've met some very intelligent guys. Like, you know, I'll give you a prime example, that one guy that I met, right, he was a white guy, and he told me years ago, he said he was talking about the lottery, and he made a lot of sense. He said, we don't teach our kids, right, to go and play the lottery, because the lottery is just a big scam. What we teach our kids, our white men and white kids, is we teach them to go and invest in some stock, something that's going to pay off in the years to come. He said the lottery, right, is only something that they use to prey on poor people with. Most people that you see when you go to the lottery line, right, are 99% black people. But when you hear about somebody winning the Mega Million or the Multi Million, it's always somebody out in the county, right, winning that don't even really need the money. So, you know, that's, in other words, he was telling me that it's just a big scam. And after I thought about it and thought things through, I knew that he was absolutely right. Well, I had to maintain my relationship with my family via through telephone, and I also was fortunate enough to get visits as well. So my family traveled to see me. The thing that pissed me off the most is where most of your headaches, right, come from, they don't come from strangers. The most of your headaches and the jealousy and the backbiting and stuff, they come from the people that you know from your city. All of the envy and the jealousy, that's where it comes from. In my experience, you know, that's what I have experienced, you know, like, you know, the people that you know, that you run across, that may have been, you know what I'm saying, from the same city that you're from, you know, that it's always a bunch of gossip. It's not that they wouldn't communicate. It was just that I was around a lot of guys that were a bit younger than me, and they stayed in a bunch of confusion. And that's something that I wouldn't allow myself to be a part of. Now, you know, if you're right, I'm with you 100%. But if you're wrong, you know, I can't stand by you. And sometimes, you know, in certain situations, when you are far, far away from home, you know, it's a code that they use. They say, well, right or wrong, you got to be with your homeboy. But I was never that kind of guy. Well, it helped me become a more responsible person, because, you know, when you go in at 20 something and come home at 40 something, almost 50, you're not the same person that you was when you went in at 29. So, you know, in other words, I'm saying you become a more responsible person, and your thoughts are not the same. Your thoughts and your actions are different. And instead of putting yourself in a position to just react at a certain age in your life, you begin to not react about a lot of situations. You got to take the time to think things through, because in a split second, it only takes a split second to mess up your life if you don't take the time, right, to think things through. And I think everybody should wake up every day in the morning and try to figure out how they can learn how to master their emotions to the best of their ability. Because if you don't, if you let your emotions get the best of you, it can be very detrimental. Well, my thing is, my answer to that is that when you go there, you, because of the change, you don't like it. But once you get put in a situation where you have to deal with it, you have to make the adjustments, and you don't have to learn to love it. You just have to learn to live with it and be focused. You know what I'm saying? And when you're away, it's only two things that can happen. You can do the time, or the time will do you. So, like I say, you always, in every situation that you get put in, good or bad, it's always some good in every situation. You just got to stay focused on, you know, getting the good out of, even out of a bad situation. Actually, I'm doing something that I love to do, and I understand that what I'm doing is something that's bigger than me. I'm actually working with a youth center right now for the Baltimore City through a company called New Vision. And I'm working with a lot of troubled kids, and I'm working with them based on, you know, mental health issues and other issues where, you know, you have a lot of kids, man, that have been abused and lied to, and they have so many issues. It's just like it's a process where you got to, what I do with them is I try to convince them and let them know that it is somebody that really truly cares. And I try to put them in a position to teach them to not be subject to making the mistakes that I made. Yeah, well, I see a lot of kids now, they make a lot of decisions, right? A lot of reckless decisions based on their emotions. And that's because they haven't had the proper guidance. And people, like, you know, elderly people haven't taken their time. Like, I deal with a lot of kids, and they say they'll talk to me about personal things, about, you know, I didn't have a father figure, or I was only doing what I thought was right because of peer pressure, or I have anger issues. I'm not the kind of person that's ever consistent at doing something. I start things and then I don't finish. And, you know, I just been lied to all my life, basically. You know what I'm saying? I've been lied to. And the people that's been lying to me is the people that I thought that loved me. And, you know, like, my dad wasn't around, and you know, my mom wasn't around, or somebody might have been abusing drugs. And, you know, it's kids out here that's lost that, you know, I want to try to do everything in my power to, you know, to try to help restore their mindset and transform it to make them, you know, a better person so they can make better decisions. So that's what I'm doing. Actually, right now, and I'm starting my own nonprofit, a 501c3, and it's called Toy Inc. And the Toy Inc. stands for Teaching Our Youth. So I'm building on that as well. Yeah, it's the only thing that stood out in my mind is that, you know, when prior to me going away, when I was young, you know, it could be my mother. It could be somebody else's mother. If the kids were doing anything that was inappropriate, when Miss Jones walked up the street, everything stopped. Everything came to a halt. And you know, if Miss Jones seen me doing something wrong, even though she wasn't my mother, she could, you know, hit me upside the head and say, "Boy, get from around here." And I don't see that anymore. The kids just don't have any respect for their elders. And yeah, they just have very little or no respect at all. That's why so much senseless stuff happening out here, because the things that they might believe that is of a great importance is really nothing. You know what I'm saying? You can get all kind of things back in life, but what you can't get back is a life that's taken. No, I haven't reached out to them, and I don't intend on doing that, because even when you know better, you got to do better. When you know that it's somebody that's around you that doesn't have your best interest at heart, it's a waste of energy trying to communicate with them. Well, I don't know why people do some of the things they do. The first thing that would come to my mind is that they're weak, you know, and sometimes you have people in your presence that are really not for you. That's why they say, watch your enemies, right? Close, but watch your friends even closer, because your friends are the only ones that can get next to you to really do you some serious damage. So you got to be careful about who you let in your circle. So, you know, the smaller your circle, the less you have to be concerned with people liking you or disliking you or whatever the case might be. One thing that I realized about my life, if I'm in the room eating and I'm the smartest one in the room, I'm in the wrong room, because I'm not learning. I'm not being productive. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if my life would have been better, you know what I'm saying, had I took a different direction, because it could have been a direction for the worse, or it could have been a direction that I took for the better. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just taking it right as it is. And at this point, you know what I'm saying, all I want to do is try to be productive in life and be successful, being institutionalized. One thing that I did do a lot that I still do, I eat fast. I eat fast because, you know, like, you know, when you're eating, you're on a time. It's called like a 10-minute move, and you're trying to get to other places. So, you know, you got to, like for me, I would eat quick. I would sit down and eat with guys, and I would basically be finished before they got started, because I was either trying to go to the library or I was trying to go to the rec. do things like that. But, you know, the only little slight bad habits I have, that, you know, like sometime I'll go into the bathroom and instead of washing the toilet out with the toilet brush, I'll take a sponge and just put some bleach in there and wash the toilet out and everything around it just with the sponge, put my hand in the water. And then I've been told that, you know what I'm saying, you don't have to do that no more. You have something over there that you can wash the toilet out with. So, you know what I'm saying? I had a habit of keeping everything, which I still do, you know, sort of real clean around me. Yeah, you have to find it in your heart to forgive somebody, because if you don't, it only stunts your growth. You got to bless certain things and then you got to let it go. No, it was just a feeling for me knowing that I wasn't going to be able to wake up the next morning and do what I wanted when I wanted to, because now I was in a situation where things were being dictated to me about, you know, what time I can eat, what time I can go exercise, you know, what time I have to get to the telephone. And, you know, all of those things change when you're away, because you're on somebody else, you're on the institution's time, and you're not really in control of your destiny at that point. You know, you have to learn to make the adjustments to do things based on, you know, other people's time. And that wasn't good for me. So that took a lot of patience and understanding to be able to do that. Well, that's what the federal system is all about. You know, they can come and tell you to pack up at any day and move you to another state whenever they get ready. Like I said, that the choices that you used to make for yourself are no longer yours. So you got to go with the flow of the choices that other people make for you with your life, being in a situation like that. And there's no way you can get around it. You know, when it's time for you to move up, when you go somewhere and you establish a bond and you make friends, when they tell you it's time to pack up and go to another institution, there's nothing that you can do about that but pack your stuff up and be ready to move. I didn't get angry a lot. I didn't get angry a lot because I had the support, right, of the people that was around me that loved me, and with, you know, their support made a world of difference to me. And then I used to participate in doing a lot of activities, like, you know, I spent a lot of time doing things with my time so I wouldn't have to think about the streets. And then I started teaching yoga classes and things like that, and it even made me more relaxed. So, you know, it comes to a point where you can say that, okay, my body is in here and locked up, but my mind is not.